Live from the Civic Media Studios at WRCE in Richland Center, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Alba Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Alba.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite, along with Mr. Aaron Zommers down at the old headquarters, high atop State Street, a block off the Capitol Square, TGIF. Happy Friday, everyone, the 19th of April, 2024. We're happy to have you along, Mr. Zommers. Powerful, great hour. You got Phil Nee, you got Brady Ewing, got some great callers, great texters. See, that's what we're going for.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad that you and Phil Nee talked about Record Store Day. I always forget about it because it's on 420. And now that's not why I'm forgetting about it. It's because it's also my mom's birthday.
Oh, really? Well, happy birthday to the lovely and talented Mrs. Zommer.
And unfortunately, also the anniversary of Adolf Hitler's birth.
Well, we won't celebrate
no,
that.
No, but distinctly not celebrating that.
No, distinctly not celebrating that. Coming up in hour number two here at the bottom of the hour at a little after 1:30, we have back on the program and happy to have him here, Los Angeles film critic Tim Grierson is going to be on the show. The big new movie out right now called Civil War. Is it a bit too lifelike? We'll ask Mr. Grierson, also get his take on it. And will there be another Barbenheimer? One of the big new, of course, we're only a little over a month from Memorial Day weekend, which signals kind of the start of the big summer movie blockbusters. We will ask Mr. Grierson what the blockbusters are coming up this summer in the movie season. So looking forward to that. Tim Grierson joining us live from Los Angeles, California. Always a pleasure to have him on the program. Also that on Monday, this is also very exciting. We're going to be on location on Monday. Happens to be Earth Day on Monday. And we are going to be at Governor Gaylord Nelson State Park on the north shores of Lake Mendota. And our special guest joining us live on Earth Day is the daughter of former Governor Gaylord Nelson, the founder of Earth Day, Tia Nelson, is going to be joining us, and Tia will be along and talking about her father's legacy and also what she herself has been up to lately to extend that Earth Day legacy, that conservation legacy. And, you know, Tia Nelson, her dad was, of course, a Democratic governor, but points out that there was a lot of Republican bipartisan support for Earth Day and environmental and conservation concerns. So Tia Nelson will be on the program, governor of the late and great Gaylord Nelson, former governor of the state of Wisconsin, on Earth Day, live from Governor Nelson State Park. So looking forward to that coming up on Monday as well. 9 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock. Want to get into just a couple of headlines here, and I want to go back to this story we talked about earlier this week when it broke, and that is good old OC Eric Hovde. Orange County Eric Hovde, we call him that because that's where he lives. Born in Wisconsin and then spent the bulk of his life being apparently a successful banker of a multi-billion dollar bank in Orange County, California. And look, there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But now he wants to come back and reestablish his Wisconsin roots and run for United States Senate here in Wisconsin against Tammy Baldwin, which, I mean, if that's what you want to do, but it would seem to me that Republicans should be able to find a true Wisconsinite, somebody who's lived and worked here their entire life, or at least a large part of it, rather than going to Orange County. But beside the point. So Hovde got on this interview here last weekend or first part of this week, over the weekend, last weekend, and he got talking about so-called election reforms. That's the narrative. Election reforms, they call them. And he kind of went down a tangent and started going off on nursing homes and saying that apparently we gave you the story here earlier this week in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that there was one nursing home, one, in Racine or Racine County, where there was alleged voter fraud. And it was investigated, and no charges were ever filed. All right? So there wasn't any. But Eric Hovde takes that one incident in one nursing home where there were allegations, never proven, and starts making these charges that apparently he thinks that this is widespread, and saying that folks in nursing homes are only there 4 to 5 months, and so, you know, none of these people are really out, should be voting anyway. Which I found rather offensive, very offensive, because I've had family members spend time in nursing home facilities, and most of them are very with it, and very, very able to vote, and very mentally ready to vote as well. So now, and we got a lot of phone calls, by the way, on this. Most people feeling the same as I did. And so now, apparently, this has gotten to be so political, he stepped in it, so to speak, politically, Eric Hovde, that he had to put out a new video where he tries to walk this back. So we're going to take a little bit of this here, and we'll stop it along the way, and then we'll play you what he originally said. So here's Eric Hovde's new video trying to walk back what he said about folks in nursing homes in the state of Wisconsin.
Let me tell you how a political hit job works. And the Democrats are experts at this.
So are Republicans.
So last week, in some news articles, they were written that I didn't believe elderly should vote. How did that come about? Because
all right, stop right there. First of all, no one said that Eric Hovde said that elderly people shouldn't vote. Most people, all the stories I read, gave the quote from Eric Hovde, where he said people in nursing homes shouldn't vote. But go ahead.
Because I absolutely believe the elderly should vote. Well, let me explain. So unlike Senator Baldwin, who barely ever talks to the press and doesn't do radio, and I do a lot of radio. And
stop it right
just
there.
A quick note. She was on the radio on Civic Media yesterday on Matt and Air on Air. And that is not the first time within the last month she's been on Matt and Air on Air. And that's just one show on one network. So she does do radio.
You read my mind. Very good. Go ahead.
Talk to the press openly and freely. I was explaining about election integrity issues and my concerns about several things that happened in 2020. And the last one I was talking about was what happened in Racine County, where a sheriff was asked by adult children of parents who were in nursing homes and incapable of voting, and somebody voted for them and took advantage of them.
Stop right there. Number one, again, he brings up this narrative of election integrity. All right. Number two, I'm going to talk about that in a second. Number two, again, this was investigated, this allegation, and there were no charges filed. So there is no wrongdoing that was provable. Now, let me tell you, I know a little something about Republicans talking about, quote unquote, election integrity. As it turns out, this was the main reason I left the Republican Party back in 2011. I was working for a Republican state senator, Dale Schultz, at the time, in a closed Senate Republican caucus in which they introduced so-called voter ID bills. And the purpose was to deny people their constitutional right to vote. And when it wasn't getting a lot of steam in the Senate Republican caucus, the author and ironically chair of the elections committee in the Senate at the time, Mary Lozick, stood up and put her finger on the table and kind of pounded it and said, hey, we need to start thinking about what this would mean to places like Milwaukee and college campuses, unquote. In other words, Milwaukee and college campuses tend, not always, but tend to vote more Democratic than Republican. And that these bills would help suppress the vote in those highly Democratic areas. That was the point that my former boss raised his hand. He was the only one in the room. And said, you know what? We maybe ought to think about what you just said. And the then state senator at the time, Glenn Grothman, now a member of the U.S. Congress, turned to Dale and said, well, Dale, you know the Democrats would do the same thing if they were in charge, so we better do it while we have the chance. And my boss looked at me and he said, you stay here. And he got up and walked out in protest. And I stayed there for about another 90 minutes or so-ish. and listened to Republican after Republican in that room talk about and the dog whistle was pretty loud about the actual intent of these bills. And I've said it before in this program, I have no problem with a basic ID to show a driver's license or a college ID or whatever to vote. I got no problem with that. What I have a problem with is the way that they did it and implemented it and changed the way that you could get a driver's license to make it extraordinarily difficult. And thus, and also changing the trying to change the laws on college campuses, other places. Here's what Republicans do. They talk about voter or election integrity. And then they pass these so-called voter ID bills. And then they go to places like downtown inner city Milwaukee in highly populated black neighborhoods. And they buy themselves a billboard. And before I get calls and texts, it's not the Republican Party of Wisconsin that does it. It is their third-party helpers. And they buy billboards having a black man or a black woman on it in handcuffs. And it says in great big scary red letters, election fraud is punishable by up to X number of years and X thousands of dollars in fines. And they make you think, well, if I do the wrong thing, I'm going to go to jail. And this is intentional, you understand? This is intentional to suppress the vote in areas where it might be more likely that people vote for Democrats than Republicans. So what Eric Hovde is saying here, there's nothing new. There's no new news here. The only new news is that Eric Hovde is exactly like and from the same mold and same form of these Republicans, which are trying to suppress the vote. And why are they doing that? Because they no longer have ideas that connect with the majority of Wisconsin voters. They've run out of ideas, and they're controlled by right-wing dark money, and now controlled by Donald Trump. And instead of having the courage to offer ideas that connect with people, they've decided to simply change the rules by suppressing the vote. And that is why I left the Republican Party. I'm not a Democrat. I don't agree with every single thing Democrats say. But at least the Democratic Party believes in the fundamental tenets of free and fair elections. Back with your phone calls. 855-752-4842 is the All Ball Show from Richland Center on the Civic Media Radio Network. Truth, wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Tall Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, live from Richland Center, coming up at the bottom of the hour, or just thereafter, Tim Grierson, Los Angeles film critic, talking about the new movie called Civil War. Is it too realistic? And also we'll ask him what summer blockbusters are coming up. That's after the bottom of the hour. Tim Grierson, live from Los Angeles. Right now, talking about these trying to walk it back, OC Orange County Eric Hovde, who put out a video this morning or late last night trying to walk back these comments that, no. I'm not trying to say that people in nursing homes shouldn't vote. That's just all me. And by the way, he named and showed the logo of our friend Pat Kreitlow, Up North News Radio, calling them out as a left-wing organization that somehow doesn't tell the truth. Now, look, I probably agree with my friend Pat Kreitlow 85 to 90% of the time. I'm not saying I agree with every one of his opinions. I'm sure he doesn't always agree with my opinions. He's a longtime Democrat. I'm a former Republican, now an independent. But let me tell you this unequivocally. I have worked with Pat Kreitlow as a colleague now here at Civic Media. I mean, they're a separate entity, but they're on Civic Media. I consider him a colleague and a friend. I have never heard Pat Kreitlow lie on Up North News Radio once. Not once. So that number one is just a cheap shot by Eric Hovde. But let's not take it from me or Pat or anybody else. Let's play Eric Hovde's own words. Here is what he said, one of the comments about this nursing home stuff. Eric Hovde in his own words.
I'm not going to spend my time talking about 2020. Do I believe the election was stolen? No, but did things happen in that election that were very troublesome? Absolutely. And I can point them out right here in Wisconsin. We had Zuckerbucks come into Democratic cities in a big way to push out, working with cities to push out Democratic votes. We had nursing homes where the sheriff of Racine investigated where you had 100% voting in nursing homes. Well, if you're in a nursing home, you only have 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is in a point to vote.
There you go. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote, unquote. And there were other subsequent comments where he went on with that. I mean, here's the reason that Eric Hovde didn't win and that Tommy Thompson beat him last time around for Senate, for the Republican nomination. Because Eric Hovde is not a polished candidate. And I'm not saying that as a compliment. Oh, like he's a real guy, he's not a politician. He's just not smart politically. What he said in the first comment there is what he really believes. That he doesn't think that people in nursing homes have the mental capacity to vote. Which is patently false. I listened to Matt Nair on air, Jane Matt Nair on the Way Up Richland Center today. Great show, great hosts. And one of our listeners, who listens to her as well from right here at Richland Center, I know him, Dr. Robert Smith, had texted in, and he has dealt with this, and he said that unless, I'm paraphrasing, that unless you have a power of attorney where someone is now legally taking care of your legal dealings or health care, that you have the right to vote in Wisconsin. As I said, my maternal grandmother lived until 96, voted up until a couple months before she died, and she was absolutely with it. And the Republicans know that he stepped into Eric Hovde. And so that's just the point that they're trying to walk this back. Very quickly, Cam from listening on WISS, Oshkosh Air Support, Cam from Nina says, a good distinction between Republicans and Democrats that people need to listen for is this. When do you hear Democrats talking about preventing people from voting? Another note, I think someone is coaching Eric's speaking patterns. It's not like I have an ability or anything silly, but I'm pretty in tune with pattern recognition, and he speaks in a pattern very similar to Tucker Carlson or Jordan Peterson. Well, I'm not sure about that, but
I've also definitely noticed that he's talking differently than he used to in some of his earlier things. It's, I don't know, especially that ad where he was trying to walk it back sounded a little weird for him, like unnatural.
He's clearly being coached by people in the Republican Party who knows that this is enormously unpopular, what he said and what he clearly believes, which is the intent of Republicans, which is voter suppression. Cindy, listening in on WXCO Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, Cindy in Wausau says, you're right. He, Eric Hovde, is not a polished politician. He is a polished turd, unquote. Well, okay. Everybody's entitled to an opinion. My point here is, don't be fooled. I mean, don't get caught into the emotional part of this. I can do the same thing, believe me. But the realest, because I've been in the room, I've heard what these people say behind closed doors. And their goal is voter suppression. And when they talk about voter integrity, again, think to yourself in your polling place. Do you not trust the people that you see every time you vote? I do. And that's just replicated across the state. There is no voter integrity issue or problem, at least widespread, where it changes the outcome of elections in the state of Wisconsin. 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Wisco Paul. Wisco, just a minute and a half left. It's yours. What's see you?
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I think they're all kneeling to the altar of Donald Trump. They all have to say this to get his endorsement. But I've never understood one thing. How do you walk things back? When you put it out there, if I say something, you've been in politics longer for quite a while. I don't understand. Once you say something, how do you walk it back? So thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate it, Wisco. A great question. And, you know, as someone who was a communication director and a chief of staff and advised politicians for a long time, I was always really realistic with my bosses. And I'm fortunate that I didn't work for people that stepped in it very often. But on the rare occasion where you said something, most of the people I worked for, it was, they simply put it in a way that could be misunderstood, but it wasn't blatantly a lie or trying to tell a lie. So, I mean, if I'm working for Eric Hovde, which thank God I'm not, I'm telling him to go out in front of the cameras and say, you know what, I was wrong. I don't believe that. I reject it. Wisconsin's elections are free and fair. It was one isolated accusation of an incident Racine, and I support our local clerks. That would be the right thing to do if you want to walk it back. But of course he won't, because that's completely counter to the mega narrative of you know, these so-called election integrity issues. So he can't, the only way you can walk it back and do it well is if you do a mea culpa, or if you say, look, I used the wrong language. This is what I meant to say. And then it's essentially the same thing, just in a different context. Because sometimes, look, we all say things in a way or a manner which we regret, or say, look, I misspoke there. I was just dumb. I was wrong. I've done that before. We're human. People will forgive you if you make a human mistake. But if you're trying to say something completely counter to which you were on videotape and audio tape saying...
More than once.
That's pretty tough to walk that back. Pretty tough to walk that back. Stay tuned. We are going to walk forward with our friend Tim Grierson, Los Angeles film critic, now at RogerEbert.com. Talk to him about a new movie called Civil War. And is there another Oppenheimer, another Barbieheimer in the movies ahead? We'll talk to him. Stay with us. News update now on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Tahlball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 34 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock on this TGIF Friday edition. Welcome in this 19th of April, 2024. Glad to have you along. We are live on location from WRCE, our station out here in beautiful southwest Wisconsin, the old hometown in Richland Center. Glad to have you along with us and glad to have our next guest here. Once again, we welcome back to the program Tim Grierson, joining us live from beautiful Los Angeles, California. He is the senior U.S. critic for Screen International, also at RogerEbert.com and Cracked, amongst others. A renowned critic. We always appreciate his time. Tim, welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on, Todd.
Oh, absolutely. So tell us, before we get into the movie here, tell us a little bit about what you, I know you've had some different hats you've worn in the film critic world. What have you been up to as far as just working and personally? How are things going for you?
Things are good. You know, it's late-ish April, I guess. So I've been to the Sundance Film Festival. I'm going to a documentary festival here in about a week. And then... pretty soon it'll be May, and then I'll be going to the Cannes Film Festival for 2 weeks, which really I feel like is the kickoff of, I don't know, serious movie season or prestige movie season. You know, Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis is going to play there, the new David Cronenberg, you know, a lot of sort of big auteurs are going to have their films premiere at Cannes. So it's a really exciting time, and then of course you go right into summer movie season, and then the fall movies. So things are very much heating up post-Oscars over here.
So those of us who are not in the film critic world, you always flip on ET or TMZ or whatever, and we see, you know, Cannes, and we see the glitz and the glamour and the champagne, and it just looks like a good time had by all. As a critic, do you get any moments of that at all, or is it just all work and really no play?
It's more work, less champagne, I would say, and not much red carpet, though it is funny, depending on the situation, and I won't bore you with the details, there are situations where occasionally a movie will show at its fancy world premiere, everybody on the red carpet, before the press screening, and that means press also go, and they have to wear tuxedos, so I pack a tuxedo every year just in case I need to have it for one of the screenings. That's as fancy as I get all year round. It's very weird to watch a movie and review a movie in a tuxedo. So it's mostly work. I mean, it is mostly work, but it's also like downtime, having dinner and drinks with colleagues. But no, I'm not partying on yachts. The stuff that you're seeing, the really kind of glamorous side, I'm not doing very much, which is fine. Those are all right. Famous people. As a non-famous person, I don't think I'm allowed in those circles.
Well, you're famous to us, and we appreciate you being here.
Next time I see you, Todd, I will wear my tuxedo.
God love you. That'd be fantastic. You know, one of the big films right now, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was number one. I'm not sure if it still is at the box office, but Civil War is the new picture that's out that people are kind of talking about. Tell us a little bit about the premise. I know you've seen it. You've reviewed it. What are your knee-jerk reactions, your overall reactions after seeing this new film, Civil War?
Yeah, so it was number one last weekend, and it might be number one this weekend. It depends on how well this horror movie Abigail does, but it could be number one again. Whole other thing, but it could be number one again this weekend. It definitely has been. In terms of movies that people have talked about this year, it's probably the most talked about in this early 2024. It's a new film from writer-director Alex Garland, who did Ex Machina and Annihilation. And I think that there's a lot of impressive stuff about it. I'm assuming most of your audience knows, but if they don't, it is a movie that's set in the near future in which America is at civil war. Kirsten Dunst plays a photojournalist who, with a team of journalists, is traveling to Washington, D.C. because the word is the presidency is going to collapse, essentially, that the rebels are going to take over Washington, D.C., and essentially stage a coup and remove the president physically from power. As a journalist, she wants to be there. So the movie is a road trip. And I think there's a lot of impressive stuff. I'm a fan of Alex Garland's movies. And I think that what's best about the film is that I think all of us who are American movie viewers, we are used to seeing war movies in other countries, in other lands. We're used to seeing war-torn, destroyed cities, buildings in rubble, people, you know, scouring in fear and terror because of all the terrible things that have happened. But we tend not to think about it very deeply because those are things that happen over there.
Right.
What's interesting about Civil War is that in a very sort of blasé way, Alex Garland recreates those types of scenes, but in America. And it's automatically more shocking for American viewers simply because, oh, I know that place. They go through Pittsburgh, for instance. They also go through Washington, D.C. And it's like, oh, I recognize some of these buildings and locations from America, but they look like they're a war-torn country. Yeah. And I think for a lot of viewers, it's going to make them think about the fact that they don't think about that very often, that they associate with, yeah, it's just some foreign country in some language I don't speak. I don't have to really think about it. But when it happens in the U.S., I think a lot of audiences are shocked by that. And that's one of the points Alex Garland is making about how we're kind of blind a lot of times when we see those atrocities in other places and we don't make a human connection. That's what works well. I think what doesn't work well is I think for such a gifted screenwriter, this is the first time Alex Garland has not created really great characters. Kirsten Dunst is very good as this, you know, very seasoned photojournalist who's been all around the world documenting these types of atrocities, and she never thought she'd see it in America. But I think that her character is a bit of a cipher. I think the other characters are a bit of a cipher. And so what you're stuck with is a movie that I think pushes on hot-button issues about how divided is our country? Could our country go to civil war again? But I think beyond investigating our collective anxiety about that, I don't think in terms of a story, it's actually very well told.
That's interesting. I mean, it's being released in 2024, obviously a huge election year. And we talk politics on this program all the time. And certainly there are people like myself that believe if Trump would get back in the White House, that could be the end of democracy as we know it. In fairness, there are also people out there who truly believe that if Joe Biden were to get a second term, you would have the same result. And so when you have people on both sides of the political spectrum who feel that the results could end in a civil war. When you go to a movie called The Civil War like this, Tim Gerson, do you think it's a significant movie in making us think, or is this just Hollywood?
I would say it's sort of in the middle. I think Alex Garland is a very smart, thoughtful filmmaker. He works in genres. Before he was a director, he wrote the screenplays for 28 Days Later, that zombie film, and also Sunshine, both of those directed by Danny Boyle. So he is somebody who is not a glib sensationalist. He is somebody who has thoughts on his mind in the movies that he makes. He's made films about sexism and gender disparity. So he's definitely somebody who is talking about what's going on in the world, but doing it in a way that I think that's very sort of thoughtful. I think Civil War is thoughtful as well. I don't think it's thought through, which I think is a crucial difference. I do not think it is a movie that is just meant to be, it's not meant to just get a rise out of people. It's more thoughtful and more serious of purpose than that. And so I understand for a lot of people there might be an anxiety about, I don't want to see this movie, or why the heck would you make a movie or release a movie like this year? I think that, though I think the movie has significant failings, Garland is somebody who is definitely trying to engage in these ideas in good faith and really trying to kind of imagine what it would look like if the country actually fell apart, again, in the way that other countries around the world have fallen apart all the time. I mean, I think what's also kind of important about the movie is that Alex Garland is essentially saying, there's nothing special about America. There's no reason why the things that, again, that we see on the news in other parts of the globe could not happen here. I think that the movie is, again, despite its flaws, I think it's supposed to be a wake-up call in terms of just, to your point, Todd, this idea that depending on how the election plays out this year or some other point in the future, that democracy is not a given in this country. And I think that we sometimes take it for granted. And I think also we have a lot of post-apocalyptic films in movie theaters that usually make like the end of the world seem kind of awesome in certain ways. Like it's bleak, but it's also supposed to be kind of cool and dramatic. And again, to Garland's credit, this movie is not really post-apocalyptic per se, but it's definitely dystopian. But the movie, again, I don't think the movie works, but I definitely didn't walk away from the movie being like, oh, Alex Garland is really trying to exploit those anxieties, because the movie is actually de-emphasizes anything that might seem remotely awesome about, oh man, they blew up the Capitol, or oh man, they blew up this. There's nothing, you're not supposed to, I mean, I haven't seen it with a paying audience, but I can't imagine most people would be cheering the action scenes in this movie. You're more taken aback by it, and that's very much by design. So to long answer to your question, but I don't think Garland is trying to capitalize on people's fears and anxieties by making just sort of a cheap action flick. There's more going on in this movie.
Talking to Tim Grierson from Los Angeles. He is the senior U.S. critic of Screen International, also at RogerEbert.com and Cracked. You can find his work also in Los Angeles Times, amongst many other publications. We appreciate the time, Tim Grierson. To button this one up before we get into the summer, I know we talked about this before a little bit on other visits. As a seasoned critic, do you get, when you go to a movie like this, I mean, do you allow yourself, or can you allow yourself to kind of be drawn in and say, and forget about being a critic and know that you know all the things that happen behind the scenes to make movies? Is this a movie that kind of touched you as a human, as a person, beyond being a critic? Or did you just sit there and say, well, this is whatever it is, but it really never got to you emotionally?
I think seeing the scenes that Garland constructs in the movie, and this idea of just America falling apart, I think it's hard not to be engaged in it. My reservation about the movie is because the characters are not very well drawn, and Garland's usually very good at doing that. This time, I wasn't engaged in the actual people. That's, I think, the problem with the movie, is that it's more intellectual than, I think, really an emotional experience.
Got it. So you're at RogerEbert.com. Is it a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
It would be a thumbs down in the Siskel and Ebert world. It would be a thumbs down.
All right, very well. Sorry to hear that, but I'm going to go see it. I'm going to go see it because we're going to talk about it more on the show next week with our morning team, or at least one half of it down at Madison. So we'll be talking more about Civil War in the future, but appreciate your review of that. About a minute and a half left before our first break here. We'll come back, Tim, but kind of taking a look at the upcoming movie season. Are there any movies that you're interested in, kind of looking ahead to the summer, and if so, why?
I would say the Furiosa, the prequel to Mad Max Fury Road. I'm really very curious about. That's going to open in May or June, I think, something like that. It's going to premiere at the Cannes Film Festival, actually. And I've also heard great things about The Fall Guy, which I haven't seen yet. Yeah, it opens at the beginning of May. Stars Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. Speaking of Barbenheimer, the two stars of those movies together. Supposed to be a really, really fun action, comedy, love story, obviously based on the TV show. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that, like the 21 Jump Street movies, though, it is a more sort of irreverent take on the TV show and kind of doing its own thing with a lot of incredible action sequences. So I'm very excited about that, too.
Speaking of Ryan Gosling, I just thought his performance at the Oscars this year was fantastic. I thought he kind of stole the show. I'm not sure if you thought it was just hokey and cheesy, but I thought it was fantastic.
I very much enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed his performance in Barbie. I thought he was great in Barbie. And I liked that performance at the Oscars. After not knowing if he was actually going to do it and then kind of last minute saying yes, they pulled it off. Yeah. And it really, I mean, that's a heavily choreographed, orchestrated thing that they did. Yeah. And it worked really, really well. So, yeah, no, I'm with you, Todd. I thought it was great.
I thought he kind of brought the audience into it. I thought it was a little cheeky, broke the fourth wall a little bit. I thought it was, you know, he was kind of laughing at himself with everybody else and knew it was hokey, which made it fun.
Yeah, I mean, for Oscars, I thought it was maybe lacking in some energy in certain points. That moment, I think that the Oscar producers knew was going to be sort of money in the bank, and it was.
Jimmy Kimmel, what do you think? Yes, no on his hosting this year?
I think he's okay. He's not my favorite. He's no Steve Martin. Steve Martin is like...
Absolutely. Who is Steve Martin?
I mean, Steve Martin is like the best among the best.
Speaking of the best among the best, Tim Grierson, LA film critic, will return after this and look at more movies in the summer. You're on the All Balls Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on Civic Media. 10 now before the hour of 2 o'clock. That's 10 minutes away for a news update. And then our friend Maggie Dawn and the Maggie Dawn Show right here on these airwaves across the state of Wisconsin and on the Civic Media app worldwide. Stay tuned for Maggie Dawn immediately following our show. Right now, we're pleased to welcome back our guest this segment, Tim Grierson. He is the senior U.S. critic screen of Screen International, also with Los Angeles Times, RogerEbert.com, and Cracked, amongst many others. Talked a little bit about the new film Civil War, but also, Tim, talking about this movie's season coming up, because, I mean, Memorial Day, kind of the unofficial start of the summer movie blockbuster season. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's funny. I think traditionally that's right, though it really is now the beginning of May, I would say.
Okay.
It really starts kind of getting underway. We talked about Fall Guy in the last segment. I think Fall Guy is really, that's the first weekend in May, and I think that's very much the attention moviegoers. Summer movie season has begun, clang, clang, clang. So I think it's really May, all of June, all of July. August gets a little sleepier because kids are, you know, it's the end of summer, kids are getting ready to think about going back to school. So you still have summer movies in August, but they tend to be not as good.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. So we talked, you know, Barbenheimer last year were the dual big blockbusters. Other than Fall Guy, are there any kind of just popcorn summer blockbusters that maybe you're not looking forward to but are going to be released and could do well at the box office?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's going to be a specific Barbenheimer where it's two big movies the same weekend. I don't think there's anything really kind of on the horizon that looks like that. But there are things it's funny when you'd ask me about things I'm looking forward to. As a film critic, that answer can be sort of twofold in a way, because there's certain movies you're really excited about. And I mentioned those in the last segment, Furiosa and The Fall Guy. But sometimes you're just sort of curious because you are concerned. You don't know if it's going to be good. It might not be good. but you're sort of hopeful. And in that category for me, that could do really well is Inside Out 2, the Pixar sequel to their hit film from about 10 years ago. Once again, it's about, you know, this young girl. It's the emotions inside her head. There are new emotions because she's a little bit older now. I think anxiety is one of them. I have loved Pixar for a very long time. I have not really loved their recent movies. Buzz Lightyear was not good. And I didn't like Onward. I did not like their movie from last year that got an Oscar nomination about the different elements called Elemental. Yeah. I think they're kind of on a bit of a losing streak. I have not liked when they have made sequels in the past, but I have to say, because their original stuff has not been as good, I'm kind of hopeful that Inside Out 2 is going to be good. Amy Poehler is back. Yeah. Several of the voice cast is back. Bill Hader is not, though. He did not come back, I think, because they did not pay him enough, frankly, right, which is kind of annoying and weird. But I am hopeful for Inside Out 2. That's a movie that I want to be good because I like Pixar so much.
Absolutely. We are about less than a mile away. Richland Center, Wisconsin, in southwest Wisconsin, one of the few cities or towns in Wisconsin left with a drive-in theater. Tim Grierson, what are your feelings and thoughts on drive-ins?
Well, especially during the pandemic, those are like the only places you could see movies, right? in a theater. And I actually had an experience where I reviewed a movie by seeing it at a drive-in because that was the only way I could actually see it. I haven't been to a lot of drive-ins in my life. I'm lucky because I live in Southern California. There are drive-ins within driving distance, like an hour and a half, something like that. I like the experience of a drive-in, but it's kind of like seeing a movie on an airplane. I don't want it to be the first time I see it because I don't care how good the audio system they have in terms of the radio station. I don't know if you've been to yours where you know, the olden days, you put the thing on your car, the little like kind of cruddy speaker. Now you tune it to a radio station and you can hear it. That's okay. It sounds all right, but it's not the most ideal viewing experience. Now, if you don't care about that and you really just want the communal, maybe nostalgic experience of going to a drive-in, I think it's fun, but it's definitely not like, they're going to be showing Furiosa at the drive-in. You want to see that, Tim? Not for my first experience. Now, that would be really fun to see a second or third time maybe at the drive-in, but my feeling is however people go to see movies in theaters, whether it's in a traditional movie theater or a drive-in theater, I'm all for it. But maybe not for my first experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there, like you say, it's two things. It's two different experiences. I think there's room for both. And for me, it depends on the movie I see, you know, whether it's in a theater or in a drive-in. We mentioned your work at RogerEbert.com. Any work there, Tim, that you'd like to talk about a little bit or promote any other projects you're working on right now?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking. You know, this isn't a recent thing, but something that comes to mind is right before the Oscars, when it looked like Cillian Murphy was going to win, I had the idea of talking to the director who he worked with at the beginning of his career, which was the aforementioned Danny Boyle, who we talked about in the last segment. Cillian Murphy was in Sunshine, which Alex Garland wrote, but actually he was also in 28 Days Later, and he was in both those movies. And so I just talked to Danny Boyle for like a half an hour and said, tell me about Cillian Murphy. Tell me about, like, not discovering him per se, but like having a feeling that this guy could be a movie star. And it was actually a really great experience getting to talk to Danny Boyle about Cillian Murphy and like that early stage of Cillian Murphy's career and how he's seen Cillian Murphy evolve over time. And also because Christopher Nolan has worked with Cillian Murphy so much, and he started working with him because he saw Cillian in 28 Days Later, there's almost this like shared thing that Danny Boyle and Christopher Nolan have, that they both work and like Cillian Murphy so much. So it was really great to talk to Danny Boyle about that. I really enjoyed that. I wrote a piece about Civil War recently, but more specifically wrote about the films of Alex Garland. His films always feature women as their main character. And these are not the stereotypical strong female character that we see so much in Hollywood, which is sort of a demeaning, simplistic, like, well, the character just kicks a lot of butt. His characters are much more complicated and nuanced. And I wrote about that and how Alex Garland has done that throughout his career, but unfortunately, how I think he kind of drops the ball in Civil War in that regard. That was a very fun piece to write.
Fantastic. Always a pleasure to have you on. Tim Grierson, senior U.S. critic at Screen International, also RogerEbert.com and Cracked and Los Angeles Times. Thank you so much, Tim. Really, really appreciate you. Have a wonderful day out there.
You too. Thank you.
Our pleasure. Also, thanks to Phil Nee and Brady Ewing as well for being on the show. And, of course, all of you for listening. Mr. Zommer is getting it done back at the World Headquarters in Madison. We'll see you on Monday for Earth Day with Tia Nelson live from Governor Nelson State Park. Until then, whatever you're believing, whatever you're fighting for, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. See you Monday. Keep banging on, banging.